Okay, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Very good. I'm experiencing some demo effect, so can you also see me?
I think so.
Sorry?
I think so.
You think so? Okay, very good. I can't
Yeah,
see.
so we you, there's the Golden Gate Bridge behind you, and we can just kind of see a black outline of you, but I don't know if that's problematic or not.
Sorry. Now.
Yeah, it's better.
Hello. Right. Just a minute. I obviously got my settings a bit differently than a minute ago. I'll just share my screen and get started. Here we go. You should see my slides now, hopefully. If you don't, just give me a shout. Okay, so my name is Nina Ormshaw, and I'm the International Coordinator in the Faculty of Information Technology. I'm here to give you the session on academic practices, so really what it is to study here at the University of Jyväskylä and the kind of things that you need to know. Yeah, this is the demo effect as I was talking. I think you will be seeing a lot of this during this autumn because although we all had a huge digital leap in the area of online teaching and learning, there's still stuff that we need to improve on. And as you can see, I could not get my background, virtual background, working. So I thought you might get a bit seasick if you saw that throughout my presentation. So instead, I'm sat on my sofa in my living room. Anyway, as with the previous sessions, I would appreciate it if you could save your questions to the end of the session. I have attempted to do so that I should be over in about an hour, so you would have about 15 minutes for questions. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, the chat is there also to use, and perhaps it's just easiest to get back to your questions at the end of my presentation. So, when I'm at the agenda for this session really is planning your studies, how to register for the courses, what are the modes of study we use here. I will go through some details about written assignments and exams. How do we assess and grade you here, or contact with the staff? And as I said, more details, more questions asked at the end of it. Just to start off with a few words about degrees in Finnish universities. I know that a lot of you are already in Finland. You probably have a Finnish undergraduate degree, so this is not news to you. But there are a lot of you as well who haven't experienced the beauty of a Finnish higher education. So, although we have completely embraced the Bologna process of harmonizing the European degrees into bachelor's, master's and doctorate degrees, we still, for some reason that is unknown to me, we refer to both bachelor's degrees and master's degrees as undergraduate degrees. Don't be alarmed if you're considered as an undergraduate student, even if you are a master's degree student. So we have a bachelor's degree that lasts for 3 years, a master's degree that is a 2-year programs. Then we have the doctoral degrees, which include some courses, the actual research work and dissertation, and a public defense, and that usually takes at least 4 years. And as I said, we actually consider doctoral degree a postgraduate studies, or a postgraduate student is a doctoral student. There is also an option of for an exit award before the actual doctoral degree, and we call it licentiate. So that's just to give you the background. Also, as many of you have experienced the European education already, but some of you haven't, I'm going to explain you something about the credits. We use ECTS credit system, so European Credit Transfer System, for our credits. So one University of Jyväskylä credit corresponds to one ECTS credit. One academic year is composed of 60 credits. So that means that each semester is 30 credits. And then one credit in turn is 27 hours worth of work. And that includes everything that you do for the course. So for one credit, 27 hours of work, including all the lectures or this autumn online seminars, online teaching, any contact teaching, any group work, any exams, essays, any written work, anything that you do for the course is included. So if you have 5 hours of lectures for 5 credits, you know that you're going to be doing a lot of independent work as well. Then about the academic calendar. Our autumn semester is just about to start. Teaching actually starts next week, and it will finish by 18th of December. Our semesters are also divided into periods. So each semester has 2 periods. The use of the periods actually does vary quite a lot from faculty to faculty. And I know, for example, that in my faculty, in the Faculty of Information Technology, we pay very close attention to the periods, and you mostly get your courses that run through one period, and then you have your exams and another set of courses begin. Some other faculties don't follow the periodical system as closely, so you may have courses that run over through the whole semester, for example. But many of you will be expecting some final assignments and exams, any final assessment around the 25th of October, end of period. Then the spring semester is also divided into 2 periods, and there is also a 5th period, the summer semester. And some faculties have teaching during the summer semester, and some faculties only have maybe reassessments or some lesser teaching during that period. For example, in the Faculty of Information Technology last summer, we only offered courses in Finnish, but there was also a lot of hints and tips where to get, for example, virtual courses elsewhere. We do have an Easter break in the spring, so late March, early April will be closed, and hopefully you get a bit of a break then as well. So let's get to the issue that you all probably have waited the most. At least I've been receiving already some queries from my students that, what do I do? What do I do? How do I plan my studies? Don't worry. You will find out all about that during this week. As I said, planning your studies starts with the idea that you should be studying 30 credits each semester. You will do a personal study plan in the place called SISU that has already been mentioned, and I will open the door a little bit and let you know what it is. And I will also talk a little bit about choosing your courses and how to actually do your personal study plan. SISU has already been mentioned quite a few times, and there is a reason for it. Because it is the study data system containing all course information and all your information. SISU is a new system, so we do still have some teething problems every now and then, especially when new features are added in. But it is under constant development, so you need to be a little bit patient, as well as we do. SISU can be used both in Finnish and English, so you can just choose your language when you go in. It has all the course descriptions, and so you can find all course-related information from SISU. At least it's a gateway to all the information, because a lot of the information can also be in Moodle, for example, but SISU is the way to all of that. In SISU, you will also do your personal study plan, and I will talk you through that in more detail later. And also, SISU will have the course enrollments, so you register for individual courses and modules and exams through SISU. You will also have the transcript of records and registration, certificate of registration available for you at all times through the U-bar, which you can also access through SISU. It's very, very important that you keep your email address and other contact information updated in SISU. We rely very heavily on emails and email communication, especially in this particular situation with the pandemic. So you really need to make sure that we can contact you. Any problems with SISU? There may be some technical problems that you encounter. You can always contact the SISU support. So, the first thing you need to do really when you get your user account, your login details, and you start thinking about your studies, you need to go to SISU and you need to start from a personal study plan. The personal study plan in SISU means that it's a plan of studies, of your particular, your individual studies, and all the timing of your studies and the order of completion of your studies, so you can plan the whole package there. It's also a tool for you, so you can keep track of which studies you still have on your to-do list and which studies you've already completed. It's all there. The study plan itself starts from the main structure of your degree. So the outline of your study plan is already there. You don't have to start from scratch. However, it's the overall structure that is in there, but there's a lot of optionality in your degrees. I had a quick look around other programs that I'm not so familiar with, and so far all the programs that I had a look had at least about 10 credits of maybe elective studies in your major, and 10 to 30 credits of optional studies. So there is a lot of optionality in your degree. When you are choosing your optional studies, obviously your study advisors can help you, but this is the area where you might not be so accustomed to have so much freedom and so much options, really. So you need to really consider your own individual background. What have you studied already? What other things interest you, and what kind of courses would make you even more attractive in the employment sector? And also, when you've done all that, you do the course registrations in the CISU system. And again, the CISU guide is there as a link, and you will have these slides later on. I have a few hints and tips for you on how to choose your courses, and one of the things that can help you to kind of have a grasp of the course, even by looking at its code, is the course code. All our courses have obviously a title, and then they all have a course code. The first three digits at our university always give you the host subject. So it's quite easy to grasp straight away to what subject that course belongs to. So for example, if the course code starts with TIE, it stands for Tietotekniikka in Finnish, which is information technology. So you know that course belongs to the Faculty of Information Technology. It's the technical information technology. And, you know that if you're a history major and you just got confused about the name of the course, for example, you know that, okay, this probably isn't meant for me. The fourth digit of the code expresses the level of studies. So if there is a P, it means for perus, as in basic, which essentially means bachelor's degree studies first year, the very introductory courses. A stands for aine, which is the second and third year bachelor's degree studies, which already assumes that you have some basic knowledge of the subject. And then, of course, the S is for syventävä, as in advanced, so that you know that your major master's degree studies are always with an S code, because they are all master's level courses. So that should give you a little bit of a helping hand when you're using your courses. As I said, you have a lot of optionality in the main structure. When you start using, when you start filling in your study plan, obviously you will have your program specific guidance, but a lot of the time you can start from your, from the courses in your own department or your faculty, and possibly from other faculties. For example, my students in the Faculty of Information Technology often take courses from the Uvascular School of Business and Economics, which is a separate school. You can also take a look at the provision in the Center for Multilingual Academic Communication that we call short for MOVI. And you can include, there are some compulsory language courses that you need to take as part of your degree, but you can also start a new language, for example, or in your optional studies, you can study Chinese or maybe Portuguese, or maybe if you think that your English, academic English isn't that great, you can improve on those, on those skills on, for example, some e-learning academic English courses. There's a lot of possibilities for you. Just a note of, not a warning, but heads up. You can find all our provision, every single course that the University of Uvascular offers in CISL, but it does not mean that they are available for you. All the titles are also in English, but it doesn't mean that they will be offered in English. So you always need to check from the completion methods whether it's actually, which language it is taught, from the languages of learning. And also there may be some subject specific restrictions. There may be issues with the level. For example, if you are interested in, okay, I study information systems, but I would be really interested in psychology, and you see a psychology course that is taught in English, wow, that looks great. You also need to check the level. So if you've never ever studied any psychology, you could not really go for the intermediate or advanced level course. They probably would have some sort of prerequisite knowledge that you should have. So basically, probably best to start from the course codes that have the indication that they are the basic level course, that kind of stuff. Also, some courses may have contact teaching in Finnish, but it may be expressed in various ways in CISL that you may be able to complete the course by independent study in English. So although it's in Finnish as a taught course, but you may be able to study it independently without the contact teaching in English. At least for my own students, I always very much recommend looking at the courses available in English in one list. It does say in the heading there, and even in the net website address, it's for student exchange for student students are who come here for exchange. These are available for you as well. They're just a list of courses that are delivered in English. And if you don't speak any Finnish, this is the place to start if you start looking for what options you have, especially outside your own faculty. There is a good question in the chat that I would like to take up on already. Somebody is asking, what is independent study? I will go through the modes of study a bit later, but literally independent study means you study independently. There are different methods that you can complete the courses, which I will return to. But independent study, in our case, always means that you will not have any lectures. You don't have any course participation, and you won't have a peer group around you. It can be either reading some books or writing an independent assignment, or even just take an exam based on some books. Hopefully this opened it up a little bit. I will return to the question a little bit later. Sticking with the practicalities of how we first get you onto those courses, the registration or enrollment period is always stated in the completion methods tab of the course description in CISL. So there is no one ultimate deadline that you need to register for courses, but it can vary from course to course. Often faculties release the enrollment period on certain dates for certain semester or certain period, but really it depends on the course, and you can see the course related registration period in CISL. The course may have different registration parts. So for example, if the course has lectures twice a week, and then they might have some practical training or demos, and also an exam at the end of the course, you may need to register for those separately. Again, a heads up, if there are separate groups in that course, and you need to give a preference that which group you would like to be in, use the not suitable button there very, very cautiously, because that might affect your registration for the whole course. If you say that only this course group is suitable for me, it might cancel your registration completely. But I'm sure this will be talked through more thoroughly in the CISL session. If the course is full, don't despair. We always urge you to cancel your registration if you can't attend the course after all, or you look and see, okay, this wasn't that interesting or so pertinent to me, or maybe your life situation changes and you can't do that much. Whatever the reason, cancel your registration. And for that reason, we also urge you to either attend the first lecture if possible, for example, if you've got the Zoom address, or contact a teacher, because Unfortunately, not all students do cancel their registration, or they may cancel it after the first lecture, so that you actually might have a place on the course, even though it didn't appear so in the first instance. Again, all this will come much clearer at the CISL session, but you can only enroll or register, we use those words interchangeably, for individual courses when you have your user license and you have full access to CISL. Until that, unfortunately, you can't formally register for any courses. The CISL instructions and CISL videos are very good, but it took me some time to grasp the whole of it, sort of the major points on how to register. So this is what I did for myself, really. So course registration is, you plan your studies in CISL in the tab called Structural Studies. Literally, the structure of your studies is there, but you need to plan your optional and elective courses so you complete the picture. Then you schedule those studies. You literally add all those courses that you have in your structure. You add them to your study calendar, which is another tab in the CISL. After you have scheduled, because you can schedule the whole 2-year degree in one go, you see how it looks, you see whether there's any heavy periods or kind of, okay, this is where I do my research and this is where I do my course studies. So you can see the whole timeline at one go. Only after that, you enroll onto the separate courses. And you only enroll on to those courses that are most immediately coming in your structure and in your study calendar. So if you're a first year student, we probably don't have any programs that you should enroll for the thesis, master's thesis seminar, for example, this autumn. So in the study calendar, you can see that, okay, this semester I will be taking that, that, and that. And those are the courses that I enroll on. Also, you cannot enroll onto any course until they are in your study plan. So always put them in your study plan, in your schedule first, and then you enroll. As I said, the enrollment deadlines are in CISL, so each individual course will tell you when you can and can't enroll. Then to the modes of study. There will be a lot of you who have background in the Finnish education system, either from universities or from universities of applied sciences. Some of you have absolutely no experience about Finnish higher education. So it's going to be very difficult for me to cover all the modes of study in this session. What I would urge you to do is to go and independently read the generic descriptions from our website. I will give you all the details later on. And also, some of the terminology, for example, may vary a little bit from faculty to faculty. So it's important that you ask from your own faculty and from your own program if you don't know what certain type of or mode of study actually means. Please ask. The modes of study do vary from faculty to faculty, from program to program, and even from course to course. Some courses may be fully just lecture courses, and you will meet online your teacher twice a week for 2 hours. That's it. You have an exam at the end of the course, done. Some courses may have lectures and some demos. For example, in the Faculty of Information Technology, a demo, a demonstration, means that you have done some practical work before the actual meeting, and then you present what you've done and discuss the results. In some other faculty, it may mean a little bit different. Or you may have some lab work or group work. Again, you may have online courses, or you may have small group face-to-face teaching. It all varies from course to course. Learning diary can be a mode of study. So you may only have maybe a certain number of lectures, but then you have to, the assessment for the course is a learning diary. You have to, for example, report the main points of learning that you actually did from those lectures. What did I think about it? What did I learn from it? What were the main points? Stuff like that. You usually will have more detailed guidance from the teacher of the course. If you have any doubt, what does this mean? Ask the teacher. So, this is, for example, an exam, a course outline, and in CISL, and on the first page, when you go to a course, you always have the info bit that will give you the basic course description of what the course is all about, what is the content and prerequisites, and who's teaching. And then there was a comment that you can't see clearly. Sorry about that, and it's not really meant for reading word by word, but actually to just to have a quick look at how it looks. And again, just an example that you probably can't see very clearly. The second tab on the course description will have the completion methods. And there you may have method one, method two, method three, or just method one. And in this case, you only have one method of completing the course, which is teaching. Okay, so that's the basic idea, that the course description should usually have at least an outline of how it's done, and then the teacher will give you more details when you start the course. We are also very, very flexible, so sometimes the teachers want to hear how you want to do the course. So it might not be set in stone yet how the course is actually completed. What's important to notice when you do your study planning, and especially when you start enrolling your courses, is that we don't have any ready-made timetables for you. Many of you who might have already been to University of Applied Sciences, even our Finnish speaking students, you maybe have had a more ready-made timetable for you, at least for the first semester, that okay, these are the courses, go and study. We don't have that. You do that. So you need to be clear when you're putting your enrollments together that there may be possibly overlapping schedules, and you just need to see how you can manage that and whether you can take the one of the courses at another time, for example. I do recommend taking any Finnish course in the first semester if you don't, if you're not a Finnish speaking student. Don't miss the first lecture, because the first lecture is often the lecture where the course completion is discussed and all the guidelines are given. So, for example, as I said a minute ago, that even though the course description says that it's two sets of written assignments and that's the assessment for the course. After discussions at the first lecture, you, the teacher, and you students may together come up with another idea, and you need to be aware of that. You need to know what the assessment for that course is. So it's very important that you attend the first lecture, and if you can't, contact the teacher and ask. Also, we have this thing called academic quarter, akateeminen vartti, and some of your lectures, some of your meetings might start at 1400 hours, 1400, or just 14. If it doesn't have the 00 at the end of it, it probably means quarter past. Still, some time ago, we started all our meetings and all our lectures quarter past, but there's more variation on that nowadays. And make sure that you know whether you're supposed to be there at 2 or 2:15. Also, attendance requirements vary. Some courses don't have any attendance requirement. Some have 80%. Check with the lecturer. The teacher of the course is always the best source of information about that particular course. Also, the class sizes vary. So we may have classes of 10 to 400. Obviously, the methods of teaching and learning vary if the variation in the student numbers on one individual course is that great. So teaching methods vary from course to course and, for example, from teacher to teacher. Naturally, in this current pandemic situation, there are some restrictions. So we're not starting the studies, and you're not starting your studies the way we normally do it. In some cases, it's better. In some cases, it's not so good. But again, faculties vary a little bit in this, and obviously subjects. Some subjects are easier to accommodate by distance learning and some are less so. So probably the majority of your courses will, this autumn at least, be by distance learning. Probably you'll be sitting a lot in Zoom and Teams, but possibly you may have some small group meetings as well. But you will get more information on this at the at your program meeting on Thursday. Then a few words about written assignments. There are great cultural differences in structure and style and referencing of written work. So although it's another a full 5-credit course to go through through all that and how we do things here in Finland, I need to raise a few issues here already. And also a hint, Movi offers courses in academic writing, for example. So a good place to go to if you're not so sure about your writing. But there are clear instructions also in already online. And you really need to be aware more than anything about the differences, cultural differences between your own background and what we here in Finland consider good written assignments. Submission varies from probably not this autumn so much in paper, but in the normal situation, you may have a teacher who wants your written assignment on paper or by email or through Moodle. So again, it's up to the teacher. And also the check to check the deadlines is your responsibility. The reason why I'm already taking the written assignments at this stage, so that all through your studies, and particularly at the towards the end of your studies when you start doing your research, you really need to be aware of academic fraud and plagiarism and how to avoid those. What fraud means, it's cheating. For example, if you talk in an exam, that's fraud. You can get into trouble for that. Copying an assignment or taking an exam or doing an assignment for somebody else or somebody else doing an assignment for you, that's a complete no-no. What plagiarism then means, and to be honest, plagiarism is the most common problem that a student may have. As I said, there are cultural differences in how particular you need to be with your referencing, for example. But in the Finnish system, you always need to properly name your source. Whatever text you write, the reader must always be clear on whether it's your own thought, your own idea, your own conclusion, or whether you are summarizing or translating somebody else. That's fine. You can summarize, you can translate from another piece of text, as long as you put the proper references and anybody can see the original themselves. It must be clear. This is the place where I want you all to visit at some point. Perhaps not today, but at the very latest when you start your first written assignments, and preferably even before that. So have a look at the JYU Code of Conduct for preventing and detecting academic fraud and plagiarism. The ethical guidelines for studying can be found at all times on our website. So you need to ensure you know how to avoid fraud or not accidentally, for example, committing plagiarism. We also have plagiarism detection software in use, so take care that you know how to reference. Then a few words about exams. Again, there are great cultural differences in what an exam means, how they are taken. In some countries, exam might be a maximum of 1 hour. We usually have about 3-4 hour exams and so forth. We generally have 4 types of exams. We have lecture exams, book exams, general exams, and e-exams. And I will tell you a little bit about them all next. For all exams that you take, you can always take a re-exam. So I think I'm fair to say that there is not a single course at our university that you couldn't take a re-exam if you fail the first attempt. We also don't show, for example, any retakes on your transcript of records. Essentially, you have 3 attempts, but after 2 no-shows or failed exams, you really need to consult your teacher about the third chance. You always have to register for an exam. So if you do register for an exam, but you can't attend, cancel your registration. Also, in some faculties more than in others, you may rely heavily on certain books. And obviously the library doesn't have endless numbers of those books. So only a few copies may be found in the library at any time. So you need to plan ahead. If you know you've got a big exam coming and you need certain books, maybe start reading a little bit earlier than the week before the exam. Now the lecture exams are held for many courses, not all. Not all courses have an exam at all, but a lot of courses will have an end of lecture series exam, and that will be in CISL as part of the course, and you see the course, the exam registration there. If you can't attend that lecture exam at all, you need to talk to the teacher beforehand, preferably beforehand rather than go afterwards and say, oh, I couldn't attend. So we can be very flexible, but if you plan ahead and contact beforehand. Book exams is the exam type that might be very new to many of you. And it literally means that it can be a part of a course that you have a certain number of lectures, for example, and then you have a book to read and have an exam on. The book exam can be also the only mode of studying for that particular course. So as I was talking about the independent study earlier, this is one mode of independent studying that you may have on your course. Again, faculties differ in using this, and you may have no book exams in your degree, or you may have a lot of book exams in your degree. If the book exam is the only mode of studying for that particular course, it usually means that you need to read maybe 3, maybe even 4 books, and purely based on those books and no lectures or anything else, purely based on what you've read, you go and have an exam, and that is your course completion. These are usually taken on the general examination days, but with the current pandemic situation, for example, my faculty doesn't arrange any general examination dates during this autumn, so they are arranged differently. I won't go through the details, but just to mention that it's quite an exciting day, the general exam, when there's a lot of people in one room, there's a roll call, okay, Armshaw, and you've been given an envelope with your questions. This guidance on how to act and how not to cheat on the exams can be found on our websites. We also have e-exams, and there's a direct link to the e-exam guide, which you will have with these slides. Some, but not all, exams can be taken electronically at a computer, either in Agora or the X building. Again, only half of those stations are available because of the pandemic. You can get more information as and when you need. Assessment, again, is something that may be quite different for you, depending where you come from. And as a rule, work is assessed within 2 weeks of submission. So if after 2 weeks you haven't heard your results, you're entitled to contact your teacher and say, could I get my grade? Because that's your right. We use 1 to 5 scale, and it corresponds to the ECTS grades. So 5 is the best, 1 is the passing grade, but a lot of our foreign students are quite disappointed if they get a 3, but just note that a 3 is good, literally, it's a good grade. So also, if you do get, for example, a 1 for your exam, you can take a re-exam to enhance the grade. But if you get a 3, don't be disappointed. We don't use normal distribution. So for example, if all students do really, really well, they all can get a 4 or 5. And we don't have a university-wide assessment criteria, but most departments or programs, depending on what level the faculty has decided to do it, they have their own assessment criteria. And grades and credits never have any connection. So in some cultures, depending on the grade, you may get lesser credits, for example, but grades and credits in Finland are completely separate matters. If you see a course that says, for example, 5 to 7 credits, again, it doesn't have anything to do with your grade, but it means that if you want to do the basic course for 5 credits, that's fine. But if you want to deepen your knowledge in that subject, you can do the same course with more work. For some extra work, you can get the extra credits. So nothing to do with your grades. And we don't compare our students, so we can't really tell that who is in the top 10 of the program. And the results are always in SISU, and they will also appear on your transcript of records. The transcript of records will include the credits and also your grades, but it won't include any of those courses that you may have attempted and didn't pass, or didn't actually, you registered but didn't complete. Then, to remind you that we are here actually for you. So even though we are at a distance, and currently I'm in my living room, you can contact the staff anytime. At the university main website, this is a screen capture from the website. At the right-hand upper corner, you see the contacts. You can literally find any contact details of any staff from there. You don't need to contact your, say, your international coordinator or your educational planner to ask a professor's phone number or something like that. You can find themselves or yourself there. We have very informal and non-hierarchical student teacher relationship. So you can contact any professor, any teacher, even the dean, with any question you may have. Obviously, make sure that you ask the right people the right questions to ensure that you get the best answers, as in the dean might not know any particular details of a course, but there is no separation that who are the people you can contact or you can't. We're all here for you. We have this thing called academic freedom in Finland in higher education, which means that it puts a lot of responsibility on you. We consider you as adult learners, which also means that there's flexibility in the system, that you don't need to do exactly the same as the person next to you. But it also means that teachers can be quite flexible with your particular circumstances. We don't watch over for our students. We don't keep reminding you of deadlines. It doesn't mean that we don't care. The system heavily relies on you taking the responsibility for your studies. Also, it's important for you to know your rights and your responsibilities and the duties of the staff, for example. So all those rules and regulations are readily available on our website. We have this, as I said, academic freedom. It also extends to the academic atmosphere and how we are at the university. It's very casual, but you should always keep in mind that it's professional as well. We don't teitellä, we don't use the formal address of plural you. We simply refer to each other by our first names rather than professor this and that. It may be quite strange to you at first. You can contact any teacher if you don't know why you got a poor grade, for example. Contact the teacher. He or she is the person who best knows why you got that grade, what was good about it and what was weaker about it. Also, when you do, obviously, especially now, emails are the main point of contact. So be precise in your emails. That's a plea for you. So especially if you have more than one name, in many cultures you may use different everyday name than is your actual full name in your passport, for example. Use the name that you use in your CISU and passport, because it really makes it hard for us to find out any details about you, for example. If you ask about course registration but we don't know under what name you are in CISU, we can't help you. So that kind of precision, please. But as I said, we are here for you, and all the information that you need is and will be on the university website and the faculty and department study guides. If you've got questions, for example, about exam arrangements, contact your study secretary in your faculty or department. As international coordinators are essentially the go-to, if you don't know who to go to, come to us. Course teachers are your main contact with any query about that particular course, and obviously use your peers, use your tutors and your subject associations, anybody you can get hold of. And take care. There are also goodies that you will hear a lot more in a separate session, so I won't use this time from the very few questions that you may have. And keep informed. The university website has the current news for students. That's where you can literally find the current news. You will also be receiving a newsletter for our students regularly. Read it. And the mailing lists for our students are the main communication method, really. So read the emails. You may be receiving a lot of Finnish emails as well, and you haven't got a clue what they say. Don't worry. If it is not translated in English, you will receive it through another list, or you just scroll down and it's translated in English. I think I could promise you that you won't be receiving emails in Finnish that are of any importance to you if they're not in some way translated and communicated to you. You may not be on Facebook, but if you are, the Facebook groups are a good form of information sharing. Right, that was everything in an hour. So if you do have any questions at this time, please fire away. I can't see any questions on chat. Maybe you're just dizzy from my... Okay, there's a question about possible campus work. I presume you mean employment on campus. I would suggest to have a look at the career pages of our website, but also there's no one answer to that question. There are some work, for example, the student ambassadors or as a student tutor later on in your studies. Or, for example, some research groups may hire some research assistants and such, but there's no one place to gather that information for you, but you need to talk to your program staff and people and those, for example, tutoring, there will always be a call for applications. There are course registration deadlines, but they are individual for each course. But don't worry, if you don't have your user license yet, we can register you by hand manually later on if you missed the deadline. I can't tell you if everything will be online. You can see that on course descriptions on SISU. But for my own faculty, I can tell you that all our lectures will be online this autumn. Um, There's a question about who to contact for registration if the admission office is overloaded and did not reply my email. If you mean course registration, that is not an issue for admissions. It's an issue for your own faculty. So probably something that you want to save for Thursday when you meet your own program staff, then a lot of your individual questions will be asked answered. Exchange studies are possible for all the university students. However, with the current situation, we have stopped all exchanges for this autumn. Obviously, that doesn't affect you, but it means also that situations change. International exchange is also an issue that is very clearly in the in our websites. My daughter just came home, so sorry about the disturbance. I'm not sure if I've answered all your questions. Can my colleagues see any particular questions that I should respond to at this time? Again, I see a lot of questions that are related to certain programs, so save those for the study advisor in your own particular program. Okay. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you anything about next semester yet. If you are planning for next year, your guess is really as good as mine. Cecil has had some issues with study rights, so as I understand, they have been resolved, but if you still have Cecil saying that you don't have the study right for your program, talk to your program staff. I think I will stop at this point because most of the questions now seem to relate to issues that your program staff can help you with. Just remember that you have only started. This is the first day of orientation, so you don't have to and you don't need to have all the answers just yet. I wish you all great start for your studies, and I hope we all can learn how to do this distance learning together. Thank you and welcome.